Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. In 1995, the neo-soul singer D'Angelo released his debut album, Brown Sugar. After that album became a hit, D'Angelo would spend the next 5 years and over $1 million working on his follow-up. In 2000, he released the long-awaited album, Voodoo. The record received critical acclaim and was hailed as a masterpiece, but was ultimately overshadowed by the transcendent music video for the song Untitled, How Does It Feel? Faith Penick is one of the people who fell under the spell of Voodoo. Faith is a writer and filmmaker and the author of D'Angelo's Voodoo, part of the 33 and a Third series. Beta musical director Steve Gotcher talked to Faith about the album.
Almost the second it came on, because you hear sort of voodoo chants, and apparently we're actually recorded during a Santeria ceremony in Cuba, and you hear it, and I just knew immediately, instinctively, I thought, what is about to happen? Something's about to happen. I just felt it in my bones, and I was mesmerized pretty much from the second I pressed play and listened to the whole album and just stood there and stared at my stereo, and I just was like, this is the guy that did Brown Sugar?
How did growing up in the church and learning gospel music affect D'Angelo's musical development?
He would not be D'Angelo without gospel music. Gospel is in every note that he plays, and particularly when you listen to him sing. I mean, I think two things. One, when you hear him play keyboards, he came up in the Holiness Church in Richmond, Virginia. I mean, you can hear that in the way he plays, and you can hear that in any sanctified church, particularly in the South. It's a passion, it's a calling. It's almost like God is being heard through those notes, through those chords, and in the way it's expressed. And the same thing with his vocals. I think the wailing he does, I mean, particularly when you listen to Untitled, that is straight from the gospel tradition. It's particularly going way back when you listen to anybody from Walter Hawkins, Mahalia Jackson, Five Blind Boys of Alabama. I mean, just any gospel music. D'Angelo never walked away from that. And I think in a way, Voodoo was him walking more towards it and really embracing it. You can't take gospel away. It's just as important as funk, as R&B, and as rock is.
Let's talk a little bit about Russell Elovato. You described D'Angelo's partnership with him as brothers from two mothers, and that their collaboration changed the foundation of the entire R&B music industry. What made this pairing so special?
I believe Russell Elovato understood who D'Angelo is as a person and as an artist. And when he came in and mixed three songs for his Brown Sugar album, that was just a sort of love at first sight. I think he knew what kind of artist D'Angelo could be maybe even before D'Angelo knew it, because Elovato is also a very open-minded, curious guy as far as music. He has a pretty wide palette as far as the kind of music that he is really interested in. And he started out actually working in house music. He's an encyclopedia of knowledge as far as music. And I think him meeting D'Angelo, he saw D'Angelo's potential and what he could be. And so when they started talking about Voodoo and D'Angelo sharing with him that he wanted it to be more raw and more dirtier, and Elovato got into that. That turned him on. He was like, yeah, I want to help you get there. And I think he understood what he needed to do as an engineer to help him get there.
D'Angelo put together a who's who of musicians for Voodoo, including a notable collaboration with the Roots drummer Questlove. How did he influence Voodoo?
Questlove, again, another really open-minded, curious. You can't pigeon him as far as his musical taste. I mean, very eclectic. So basically, with D'Angelo and Questlove, you have two eclectic, iconoclastic musicians, both talented in their own right, really coming together and just saying, you know what? Let's throw stuff against the wall and see what happens. A lot of this album came out of just them jamming and messing around. It was very, even the recording of Voodoo was messy for like the first year, in that it was a lot of just jams. And so I think Questlove and D'Angelo just, you know, they understood each other because on a lot of levels they're two sides of the same coin.
And they're open to a lot of different influences. And one of the many influences is the gritty funk of Parliament Funkadelic, George Clinton. And the song where the P-Funk sound really shines is Chicken Grease. What can you tell me about this track?
Yeah, I mean, Questlove said in an essay that he wrote for OK Player that Chicken Grease was sort of an ode or a tribute to the P-Funk classic Flashlight. Even though it has that P-Funk feel and was sort of a tribute to Flashlight, it actually came out of them jamming to a Curtis Mayfield song called Mother's Son. So again, I mean, you have that they're taking those different influences and merging them into one.
Chicken Grease also illustrates the mumbling or the distorted vocals that D'Angelo uses throughout the record. Why do you think he did that?
At one point, D'Angelo did talk about how mumbling was his way of connecting with the spirit. So again, we're going back to his gospel roots, his Pentecostal roots, and really embracing that.
So that kind of speaking in tongues thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of that paradigm. I mean, obviously he wasn't speaking in tongues
right
on the album.
But mimicking it, maybe?
Yeah, mimicking it or just sort of skimming it off the top, if you will. He was still singing lyrics, but I think it was less important for him for people to understand the words as it was for them to understand the spirit and understand the emotion and the passion that he was trying to convey. I actually interviewed an ethnomusicologist from Indiana University for the book, Alicia Lola Jones, and she says that actually is part of the tradition of Afrocentric approach to music and to performing, and that is very much part of the gospel tradition and also a rejection of Eurocentric ideas as far as what makes a song a song.
Speaking of his lyrics, one of the songs that I think really showcases his songwriting skill is the tune Spanish Joint. What can you tell us about that?
Spanish Joint is one of my favorite songs on the album. Whenever it rains, feel the sway. Little something to get me through the day. And you talk about who's who of musicians. He co-wrote it with the late, great Roy Hargrove, an amazing trumpeter who was also a wunderkind. I mean, like D'Angelo, he came out really young and pretty much blew people away from the start. And so when they started working together, you hear it on Voodoo, like how amazing. I mean, between Play a Player and Spanish Joint, the work that Roy Hargrove did as far as these melodic and creating these harmonies with his horns. And it just took the album to another level. Also, Charlie Hunter, who is another amazing jazz guitarist, who played a special 8-string guitar where 3 of the strings are bass strings, so he was playing guitar and bass at the same time. It was really a amazing collaboration of jazz artists, but also had this Spanish influence to it. But I really do think that that song, from a musical standpoint, is so tight and just so beautifully constructed as far as the harmonies. And D'Angelo's vocals are just so profound as far as just the range he hits. I mean, you feel like you're walking in Havana listening to that song. But when you get into the lyrics are pretty profound in its own right, in the sense that he's talking about really challenging people and himself to try to push through hard times. And one person in particular to say, like, don't be negative. You've got to find a way to live your life. You've got to find a way to see it through. I mean, he was in his early 20s when he recorded it. He was 25 when it came out. For someone to be that intelligent and be able to express that level of emotional intelligence at such a young age, how do you write about something like this at such a young age and be so eloquent about it?
Tell me about your thoughts on the track Left and Right.
left and right. Definitely one of those songs. It's great for the club. It's a great song to dance to. It's very sexy. But it is bookended by raps by Method Man and Redman that, as a woman, as a feminist, I have to say, it sort of bothered me. They can get pretty disrespectful when it comes to women, and it did seem a little bit out of place with the rest of the album. I don't think D'Angelo's a misogynist. He was going through a lot when it came to women, but I think at the end of the day, he loves them and respects them also. And that, I think he was expressing that on the album as well.
And are there songs that are examples of a celebration of women on that album?
I mean, Untitled, I guess, is the obvious one. The Root is definitely a song where he just sings about being under the spell of this woman that basically, who is basically gonna be, possibly be the end of him on a certain level. She left a stain, left a dirty stain in my heart. I can't refute. No, I can't. I think One More Again is probably another example of him lamenting the one that got away, the woman that maybe he knows he should have been with, but for whatever reason it doesn't work out. And particularly if you're the one that ended it, you're like, oh man, maybe if I could go back and change time.
The song most people associate with Voodoo is Untitled, How Does It Feel? It stands out because of a music video, and you refer to it as the video. What makes this video so important?
There was a gender divide with the Untitled video. Women loved it. Straight women, and probably a few lesbians too, loved that video. And I think in part because it wasn't just, ooh, let's look at D'Angelo's abs, but I think it was the sort of underbelly, undercurrent of that video, which really was vulnerability. I have a friend who said at the time, and I think it's, and I actually quoted it in the book, and I think it's accurate. She said, D'Angelo's nakedness is a metaphor for vulnerability. And that's what men couldn't deal with. I don't even think it was so much him being quote unquote naked. He wasn't really fully naked. He was naked from the waist up. But it wasn't that, because if you remember back in the day, particularly with hip hop artists, that was sort of the thing, particularly for black male artists, black male singers and rappers, was to walk around with their shirts off. But with D'Angelo, it was understood that he was singing to a woman. He wasn't just naked for the sake of being naked. He was singing to your girlfriend, your mother, your wife, your daughter. They already got me right where you want me, baby. I just want you, man. That's when men, and I think particularly black men, sort of couldn't deal. Because then it was like, they're somehow now gay by even watching the video. And maybe that was bringing up feelings, homoerotic feelings they weren't ready to sort of approach. And also, because remember, I mean, videos back then were very male-centric. Particularly in the rap and hip-hop genre, they were making music videos for male audiences. Untitled was specifically made for women. When Dominique Trenier came up with the idea, he was clear that that was going to be a video for women to enjoy. Men weren't used to that, and they didn't know really how to appreciate it, and I think resented it.
Speaking of Untitled, you write in your book, it was the popularity of the Untitled video and the brazen objectification that came with it that contributed to D'Angelo's post-Voodoo downward spiral. How so?
I don't think D'Angelo or anyone on his team expected the video to be that big. I think it was one of those be careful what you wish for because you might get it situations. Untitled came out and really blew up. It dominated MTV, BET was playing it. Everybody was talking about it, particularly black women. What happened is that, you know, it made D'Angelo a sex symbol, but it started to overshadow the actual album. People were talking way more about the Untitled video than they were about the Voodoo album or even the song Untitled. And D'Angelo started to resent that. D'Angelo got really angry when he would perform and women would be in the front rows screaming, take your clothes off, throwing panties on stage. He wasn't prepared for that. And he really got angry because, first and foremost, he is an artist. He is a musician, he is a singer, he is a songwriter, he is a producer. And no one was talking about that. Everyone was talking about his abs, you know, and his cornrows and how sexy he was. I think that plus losing important people in his life, I think that broke him on a certain level. And I think he lost his way.
What kind of impact has Voodoo had on new artists who have emerged since it's been released?
I think younger artists look back to him the way he, again, looked back to Sly Stone and Al Green and Marvin Gaye and Curtis Mayfield and Prince as the people for him to look up to. I think he is now that gold standard for younger generations.
Faith Penick, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Faith Penick is a writer and filmmaker. She's the author of D'Angelo's Voodoo, which is a part of the 33 and a Third series. Find out more about Voodoo and Faith at wpr.org/beta.
Mel always claimed that there was some dissension among the critics. Sometimes the dissension was in the same review. A critic would say, this movie really, really made me laugh, except for the really tasteless parts that made me cringe.
That's Mel Brooks biographer Patrick McGilligan. He joins us to talk about Mel Brooks' 1967 movie, The Producers, for our recurring segment, Young Blazing Producers. That's coming up right after this. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.